Yom, we have to learn so much about the space beforehand. So what are some of the highlights of the space that we can discuss? So you have to learn, you have to know of all the laws and how to make matzahs properly. So for most of us, it's not relevant mindset. Then the Rishon discuss, you have to learn all the halachas of Kasher and Kalim properly. So for most of us, that's not to the realm of Dida. What else is left for us? Very, very little. So when the Rishon got right, you have to chazer all the dim, how to eat the matzah, how to drink the dalak. He says, everyone knows how to do that. But if you did last year, so that was an easy halachas. So halachas that were really hard. Of course, you know, that's the chazer, and the halachas of making the matzahs, and the halachas of Kasher and Kalim. So I thought we'll go a little bit of a throwback in the old days. We'll spend a little bit of time on that, not the baking matzahs. We'll spend a little bit of time in terms of the halachas of Kasher and Kalim. So Kasher and Kalim today is very, very different than it was in days gone by. Kasher and Kalim in the old days, so then the person kashered everything. You kashered all your silverware, all your pots and pans, everything. People didn't have that much. People didn't have the luxury to have a whole set of dishes and everything for Pesach. So whatever could be kashered would be kashered. As long as that Baruch that we don't kashered that many things, following the Gemara's recommendation. The second part was a Pesach, and the Gemara says if you're able to afford to get a new ketel, it's a little bit. If you're able to get new kalim, so you must be supposed to try to get new kalim. If you're not able to, so then you're allowed to kasha things. The things that we both usually kasha, as well as that, are those kinds of things that we really can't get new ones. We can't get new ovens of Pesach, we can't get new stovetops of Pesach, we can't get new sinks of Pesach. So those are things that we're stuck with kashering. So we just spend a little bit of time talking about some of the highlights of kashering, try to get a little bit of the background in terms of the lumdas, and then we'll see how some of it plays out with Pesach. The dinim of kasher and kalim, the concept that we have a kli that has a blias iser in it, or blias chometz in it for that matter, the fact that you can kasher it, so that's something that appears two times in Bumish. There's a parasha of kasher and kalim in Vashis Matas. So the Torah says, when they fought against the Torah says that any kalim that they got from conquering the Mijanim, so called the fire shame over each the people each the hair had to those kind of the fire. Any clue that was used, the fire had to be put into the fire. Then you have to, the Torah says, ah, many times, how do you have to be tired of the kingdom, you have to be tired of the kingdom. So what does that mean, called the fire shame over each the people each the hair? What exactly are you doing by throwing the kingdom into the fire? So the point of the end of it, the Torah says, so if you have to derive the Kasher, per se, and any clue that they got the spoils of Midjan, so those kalim were trays. So they got pots and the pans and the silverware from the Bijanim. So they had all been used with Nevelus and Trapus and Mazbacholov and everything. So now the Jews wanted to use it. So they had a kasher. The Torah says, Kaldova Shayam is the age to do the hair. You have to put it into the fire. So why does the Torah use such a strange phrase? Kaldova Shayam is the age to do the hair. So the Torah says, come to teach us that if the kli was used in the fire directly, let's say it was used like a barbecue spit or a grill or something, then it has to go banish into the fire. Same way it was, we see the blia either h, so it has to be cash either h. But let's say something wasn't used in the fire mamish, it was only used with hot water. If it's only used with hot water, the Gemara says, so then it doesn't have to go literally into the fire, but it has to go into the hot water. It has to do a weak little plus in there, now lush in the lush and hagala. So it's based on this particular vicious matos, but the Gemara, the end of it is there, the best definition of it is there, develops the two processes of cash and kale. One is called leaven and one is called hagala. And how do you know whether you have to weave or whether you have to do agol? The answer is very simple. But see this question, if the clue was used in the fire, directly in the fire without a liquid, medium that it requires leaving. If it was used in a liquid, it was a pot of chicken soup or something, or a spoon, you start a little bath. So then agol suffices. This is the sugya that appears in the second step of the Zara. Then there's the second parish of Kasher and Kalim, the third, and that appears in the Tzav. And the third says, this parish of Kalim, the third says that when you cook a carbon, so there's always a problem cooking meat of a carbon. What's the problem cooking meat of a carbon? So right now I have, let's say, a carbon kaptus. I'm lying. This chef cooked a kaptus. Now they're going there, the client won't eat the carbon kaptus. So they're not going to get it raw, so they cook it up in the fire to make themselves a nice bowl of kaptus stew. So they cook it up the kaptus, so there's belief, this taste, this absorption of taste from the meat of the kaptus that's going into the walls of the pot. So what? So what's the big deal? The big deal is as follows. Let's say tomorrow I want to go ahead and use that pot to cook another carbon chatas. I can't do that because any belia that is gone from the meat of the chatas into the walls of the pot becomes subject to the dinim of nosa, the Torah says in Parshas Tzav, and any meat that's left over, fast is bar achila, If we have a chatas, the zman achid was yom v'layla, for shmol v'shnei yom v'layla achad, but any meat that's left over past the zman becomes subject to the psul of nosar. So the din of nosar applies not only to the meat that's the end, but it applies even to the bligas, even to the taste that's sucked into the walls of the pot. So now I have a problem. Every time I had a kli that I used to cook the chatas with today, I can no longer cook chatas with it tomorrow. Let's say I cook shlom, so 2 days in one night. So any pot that I use for shlom today, I can use tomorrow, but I can't use it really the following day. So that's a problem. So every time you have a chatas, you have to buy a new pot. That's going to be quite expensive. So the term addresses this issue already in Bashar's Kavah. It says, Ukli Kheres, Yativashim, Yishavim, Mechli, Mechaishas, Mushalavar, Chumayim. The Torah says that you have a pot that you use to cook chatas in, so that a morak meshutach b'mayim, you have to expose it to boiling hot water, you have to do agola on it. So this is another parsha of kasher came with the same idea, that the Torah in both places, the parsha's tzav and the parsha's matas, tells us this idea, that when you have a ta'am of something in the walls of the pot, in the case of parsha's matas, it was a ta'am of bus b'cholav and chazer and nevelos and treifas, in the case of parsha's tzav, it's a ta'am of nosar. Well, it's the same principle. Whenever there's a tam that's balu in the walls of a pot, then the way to get it out is to expose it to fire, to expose it to heat. So from Pashas Tzav, the Torah gives you an example of Hagol, and Pashas Matas, the Torah gives the din of Hagol and the din of Ribul. So the Gemara, the end of Masechet Zevora comments, the Avodah Zarah comments on the Mishnayos, the Mishnah of Beis Masechet Zevora, the Mishnah of Beis and Avodah Zarah, which is really indicated by the Pesukim themselves. The following account of the contradiction, even though it would appear that these two different kashrus are really one and the same, it sounds like there's a fundamental difference between the two. When it comes to Parshas Tzav, the Torah doesn't spell out the Parsha of Libur. The Torah doesn't say that, well, only if you cook it in water, then you kashrus this way, and if you cook it in the fire, you kashrus it in another way. The Torah just says as a blanket statement, the Torah only gives us the option of Hakol. The Torah doesn't even address the possible need from Libur. The Torah doesn't say, well, let's say you decided to barbecue, you have a need of Yechatas. It doesn't say, V'hushlach v'socha eish ayivei Libur. It doesn't say, cook it to yourself cleaning others. It just says, the Torah v'shut v'shamayim. The Torah only speaks about the model of Hakol. So the model of Libur is lacking, is missing in Parshas Tzav. Whereas in Parshas Matos, so both models are there. Kol dover sheyove v'eish. The Kol Hashem lo yevo v'eish tavir v'mayim. The Torah speaks about Hakol. And the Torah speaks about Libur. So why is it? So it's not just a question of Chumash, that's just a question of Taishim Tzukim. But the Mishnah has pointed out this discrepancy. The Mishnah in the end of Avodah Zarah, which speaks about Kash and Caleb, mentions both Hagola and Libun, whereas the Mishnah in Zvachim, that speaks about Kash and Caleb, the Beis HaMikdash, makes no mention of Libun. So why this distinction? Comes to the Gemara in the end of Avodah Zarah, and says the distinction is based on the following Yisoy, that there's a difference in Halacha between what's called Hetera Bola and what's called Isura Bola. What are the those two terms mean? So Isura Bola means that at the time when something was nibble into the walls of the kli, at the time you're kashering it, it's already considered to be a Dovra Asa. It was the Moshe of the Veila. The person bought a pot from a goy, so the goy was cooking the Veila in the pot, so the Veila is a Dovra Asa, it's Isura Bola. So there's already traces inside the walls of the pot. That's called Isura Bola, that's one type of kashering. Whereas in the case of the Beis HaMikdash, in the case of the nose, that's called that Pera Bola. Because at the time that the pot is being used to cook with, so it's a Dabra Mutta that's being nibla into the walls of the pot. It's not yet Nosar, and presumably at the time that I'm kashering, it's still a Dabra Mutta. It's not a Dabra Osa yet. I'm kashering something to prevent the Issa from being chal. That's a whole different ballgame. It says to Gemara, there's a fundamental difference between kashering something which is already a Dabra Osa, in contrast to kashering something which is right now by Shio Shama Dabra Mutta, but it's a preventative kashering. I'm preventing the Nisa from being Chal. I'm preventing the Nindos from being Chal. One's called the Surabo, one called the Terabo.
How do we know the timeline
by the Khan? Oh, very good. So this, what I just said, Khan, the Gemara, according to the Surabo Shom, I'm just fudging this Khan to the Gemara just to make the deep rush here. But you're right, the Gemara, according to the Surabo Shom, by the way, I said it's very good. So the Gemara gets it. The Gemara develops this Yisur. The Gemara says the Terabo versus the Surabo. And we're defining a Terabo versus Surabo in the following sense, that Surabo means at the time that Bli or an extension of the time of the kashering, it's already a Dabra Asur. The Terabola means at the time of the Bliya and now at the time of the kashering, it's still a Dabra Mutter. So when is there a chiluk in terms of kashering between Liban and Hagola? That's only true by Isurabola. By Terabola, there is no such distinction. The question is, what's the level of this Maharvis? I mean, we can understand, we can see that the Maharvis is that either there is blue, there's no blue. Either the kashim will work, the dagon will work, or it won't work. So what's going on? This doesn't seem to be a mitzvah issue. So what's going on? How could it be that somehow the adults that tear and fall understand the kashim are less? So there is a Rashba that develops the Yisoy, the Rashba appears in it's quoted in your day, every couple of simon in your day, this Rashba is quoted by the Beis Yosef in a little bit of a different context. The Rashba develops the following Yisoy, the fundamental Yisoy in terms of your day. Says the Rashba the following, that when we speak about two different levels of kasher, when we speak about agol, when we speak about libor, when we say that something which is a bliyah that age, something that's like a barbecue grill, spit, was mamash put into the fire, so it doesn't help to throw into a pot of boiling water. It's gorish kaf, it's not going to get out of any of the bliyahs. What do we mean by that statement? Do we mean that if you take a barbecue grill and you throw it into a pot of boiling water, mamash, nothing happens? There's no change, cues there. There's absolutely no change in the bliyahs. Straight grummer before, now straight grummer now, and zero, you promise to accomplish nothing? Is that the pshat? What's the pshat? No. That about the Matthias and Tavarim is, if you take something which is a blue at their age, and you put it into water, something's going to happen. There's going to be a little bit of a kashim taking place, but that's not enough. Halacha is, in order to get out, to make a tray for kli mutter, you open it. In order to make a tray for kli mutter, you have to get out of all the kli. You don't get ether effort. Maybe you get ether effort in Asher. Okay, you come every day, you try your hardest, then you get a 26 in the machine. Okay, so we'll give you an A minus maybe. But when it comes to kashering, when it comes to kashering, if you don't do the whole job, if you don't get every last drop out, so it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that you get 99.9%. It doesn't matter. There's any shemitz or trapez in there, so it's still up to green. You can't use it clean. So come to Ashman says, when Halacha says that there are different gradations in Kashrut, there's Liban and Agola, all the Gemara means to say is as follows, that in order to get the entire palm out, you have to do the right process. So if it was like that, well, you got to do it. If you do Liban, it's something that was told in Agola, that's for sure, but Liban is better than Agola. It's something that's told in Liban, something that you're supposed to do Liban on, you went ahead and you did the cheaper version, you did the weaker version, it's just doing Agola. It's not that you did nothing, it's not that you accomplished nothing. You got 75% of the time out, you accomplished what the Rashba calls, you were maklish the time, you weaken the time. The only problem is, being maklish the time doesn't really help you in Agloha, because even the time kolish is a dover also. But why is this important? Why is this Yisrael important? That Agloha is not meaningless on a barbecue spit. Agloha is just maklish the time. It says to Rashba, that a time kolish is a problem. Time kolish is a problem if it's a time of Yisr. If it's something which started out as a dover also, it started out as a vela, and now it's still a little shemitz in the vela, still a little bit of time left in the vela, even if it's a mashem, even if it's a time kolish, that's still considered to be a problem. But time kolish is important in halacha because that says the Rashba, Yisr can't be chal on a time kolish. When you have something which is only time kolish to begin with, it's only a week, it's only a 37.5% of time, it's not a time grom, it's not 100% kishmak of time. So a tam kolish is not nitan for nisr to be chal on. There's a difference between being mafkia pre-existing nisr and having a new fangled nisr being chal mitchila. Says the Rashba, that new category called tam kolish, if it was a dover also to begin with, then you up the creek. It remains we sort once also always also until totally removed. Hashem didn't get it. It was never also yet, and now it's just a question: will the nisr be chal on it? Says the Rashba. So that the law that a tam kolish is not nitan for nisr to be chal on. It says the Rashba, that's the reason why there's a distinction between Hagola by Isurabola and contrast Hagola by Heterabola. When it comes to Isurabola, so if it was something which was Bliyai that age, so it's the only way to get the entire time out is Lulihun. If you do a Hagola on a barbecue spit that you use for the Venus and Trefis, so then you didn't do anything. All you did was you were Makmish Tatam. A Makmish Tatam for take with the morning. That's not enough. You have to give it the entire time. It's not enough. Just to be machmish the time. So the meila hagol is not sufficient for something which was bliyai der age. Hashem gave my parabola. Let's say the moshav of the base of mikdash. So it was a bliyah of what? It wasn't a davar osir yet. It was a bliyah of a davar mutar. It wasn't a davar osir yet. I'm cooking kosher lechatchil mahadim and mahadim b'sar chatas. Oh, I have a problem that tomorrow is going to become a davar osir. So before tomorrow comes, before the yisur is chal, what do? I go ahead and I do hagol on it. even though the Baliya happened by the Eish, even though it was a barbecue grill, and there was a Baliya Gemura in there, and Hagdolah is not going to get out all the time. It doesn't have to get out all the time. All it has to do is transform from being a Tam Gomu to being a Tam Kolosh, and once it's a Tam Kolosh, the Issa Noisa can't be Chal on it, because an Issa can't be Chal on a Tam Kolosh. Tam Kolosh remains the Isuro, but an Issa can't be Chal B'chil on a Tam Kolosh. That's the Yisraeli, Yisraeli Siddurash, explained by the B'Siyais in your agenda. It's not a halacha mashmur. It's not a mitzvah hagola. It's that the hagola gets out of time, so Libra gets out more time than hagola gets out. The Torah says that the danger of that halacha is that it's not a mitzvah. It's the Torah's mitzvah. So Libra is better than hagola, so that works. So based on this fundamental side of the Rashba, so now we have to, this is all the introduction, now we have to come to that topic. We're not learning Hashikalim right now, not speaking class. We're trying to use this just to understand a little bit about Kuspeza. So it comes to the question as follows. These two categories that we have in our Loch, between the Teva Bola and the Surah Bola, and that Kamina's Lavina, in terms of how to cash things, whether there is a requirement of Libun Bechlal, which is a Teva Bola. So the question becomes, where does Kuspeza fit into this picture? What is Chametz B'Pesach? Is Chametz B'Pesach considered to be a Torah Bola, or is Chametz B'Pesach considered to be a Surah Bola? So what do you think the halacha should be logically? I asked you, what do you think the halacha should be? Should Chametz be a Surah Bola, or Chametz be a Torah Bola? A Torah Bola, good. I think most people logically would say Chametz is a Torah Bola. Why is Chametz a Torah Bola? Because you're allowed to eat Chametz today, right? So I'm allowed to eat pizza today. So it's nothing to do with Avraham Mutar. So what's the difference between Chametz before Pesach and the meat before it becomes nosed in the base of meat? That's what I would have said logically. So comes the Ramban and says that it's not true. Comes the Ramban and says that Chometz is different. Chometz is considered to be Yisur Ravola. Why is Chometz considered to be Yisur Ravola? Says the Ramban, because Chometz is Shmoy Allah. Chometz is still as a Chalei Shem Chometz even before Pesach. What does that mean that Chometz is called a Shmoy Allah? What's the word mean? Says the Ramban, let's have the Moshe going back to the day. Let's have a piece of Chachas in front of it. Just shechted the Chachas now. And I'm sitting down to eat the Chachas. I'm sitting down to eat the Chachas. So does the following statement make sense, that right now I'm really eating Nosar? It's just that the Yisra Nosar has a Menchal yet. But it's really called Nosar right now. That's ridiculous. That's double talk. What do you mean it's called Nosar now? What does the definition of Nosar mean? Nosar means meat has been left over past the Zman Achila. So the Zman Achila hasn't passed yet, it's not called Nosar. It's not just that it's really has a shame Nosar on it already, the time that Hashem. It's just that the Yisra Nosar has a Menchal. That's not true. It's not called Nosar. The very essence of the Shem Nosar, the very Chal Shem Nosar, is in Chal, until it becomes Nosar. Hashem came Chometz. It's not called Chometz today. Of course it's called Chometz today. A lot of the Rebbe refers to it as Chometz today. A lot, not yet Pesach. So that's what the Ramban says. That's it's a Shema Yalom. It has a Chal Shem Chometz on it. Right now, there's a technical quirk that happens not to be Pesach yet. So Chometz happens to be with the Yechila. But that it has a Shem Chometz, a lot of it has a Shem Chometz. So comes the Rav. And added a knesh to the Ramban. The Rav said that it's not just a question of linguistics, it's a question of semantics, what the Olam calls it. Says the Rav, there are halakhic ramifications of the fact that it has a shame comment even before Pesach. What are the halakhic ramifications? We just read the Kriya Sotayim this morning. Lo say off the chomets, chelkom asad and samarisha. We just read it on Shabbos. Lo say that there's an isra pichal sa'or called vash. You're not allowed to bring chomets and make a mikdash. You're not allowed to make a mincha. You're not allowed to make a mincha. Out of chomet, there are hilchus chomet that apply 365 days a year. It happens to be that the Pesach angle of hilchus chomet doesn't apply 365 days a year; it only applies 7 days a year. But the fact that there are hilchus chomet that apply all year long, that shows that it does have a chalashem of chomet. Even today, it's called chomet. So that's part of what the Rav claimed. That's part of the Ramban. That the chomet is Shema Yalom. The chomet before Pesach is not the same as Pesachat is before Noisim. Sachatis for Nois is good. It's lamish nothing. It doesn't have a shame is in the cloud. That's a terrible. For Hashem and Chometz before Pesach, that's considered to be Yisra Bola. So this is the big machlokes that we showed. Who disagrees with the Ramban? So there's a Tosfos in Sochem that quotes at least one there that disagrees with the Ramban. There's a sphere in Mamor Chazal, the Harakash and Nayyus. Mamor Chazal is Sochem. In Mamor Chometz, yes, Sikasha. Hani Tzakini the Pisra, Eichim Machshimir Lalo. Hani Kash and Nayyus the Pesach. So the Gemara says, Sikasha, I'm through Agola. Fill up a pot of boiling water, fine, you throw the knives in, And sure, in Hilchasa Ibn Ibn Bereisken, that was Berishan, the Gemara says you have to cash a knife based on Hagola. The place is closer, there's a Tesefta that says that when you cash a knife, you have to cash it with Libut, you have to throw a mamash into the fire. So how do you resolve that difference? What's the answer? Does it require Hagola? Does it require Libut? So the Tesefta goes 2 days. So one case choices is that there are different kinds of knives. That there are some knives that you use in cutting a piece of meat which is on the table, and there are other kinds of knives that you use cut things which are on the grill itself. So if you're cutting a piece of meat which is on the grill, so that requires leaver. That's mamash idea. Just as the grill itself requires leaver, so do the knives require leaver. Mashenke, the knives that are on the plate, so that's not idea. There's no H present on your plate. So therefore, that suffices with that goal. That's 1 day in Genesis. But the other day in Genesis says no. That the difference is not a question of different kinds of knives, but it's different things that you're kashering for. The Tosefta that says that knives require libon, that's talking about knives that became tereif. Was talking about how do you kasher a knife at Pesach? Is that a kasher a knife from chametz? The Tosefta says the standards of kashering for chametz are very different than the standards of kashering for the rest of the year. The standards of kashering the rest of the year. So then there are halachas. If it's Eidei Hagol, if it's Eidei Ribut, Moshe Enke understands the kashrut of Pesach. Everything is Eidei Hagola. Because Chomus of Pesach is Eidei Hagola. So Tosis says, Tosis quotes 1 day at least, but disagrees with the Rabban. So the Ma'is, Halacha, Ma'is, Ma'chloik, this is Yishon, what's the story of Chomus of Pesach? Chomus of Pesach is Eidei Hagola, therefore sufficing with Hagola. Whereas Chomus of Pesach is Eidei Hagola, and therefore requiring Ribut. So this is all the introduction to Adapim. We said that there are a lot of things in our kitchens that we go ahead and kasher. So the three major things that we kasher in our kitchen, one is the oven, one is the stovetop, and one is the sink. So, well, let's start with the worst. Worst of the three is the oven. So when you go ahead and you try to kasher an oven, so what method of kashering do you require? So, chara, did you require libun? Why should you require libun? Because there is no liquid. Oven became chametz, the oven became tray. So the bulia happened, are you there? H, so there's a fire in the oven. There is no liquid to speak of. So the chayyim, one can argue that it requires a libun. So that should be the starting point in terms of kashering an oven. That requires libun. So the other says that may not be 100% correct. That starting point may be flawed for the following reason. That you have to ask yourselves another question, even a further back question. Why do you have to kasher an oven altogether? So Mishlama, let's say you have a pizza oven. For argument's sake, you want to take a pizza oven and make that into baking matzah's oven. So then I understand why it requires kashrut. Why you take a chametz to go and you put it on the floor of the oven, on the metal part of the oven. That's been cooking here, been baking pizza on it all year. Now you want to use that oven to bake your shmur matzahs. So how do you have to get out the bulia? So bulia, aim b'chal libun gom nizah. How do you have to do libun on that? There was a bulia gemura from chametz into the walls of the oven. There was no liquid there at all. That's not a shayla. But that's not exactly what happens in our ovens. In our ovens, we usually don't put things onto the walls of the oven itself. Even the most yeshivish people put things into, there are racks, and microwave people are something, in regular normal ovens, so there are racks in the oven, and you take food, you put it into a pan, then something, you put it onto the racks of the oven. So why does that, why do you have to cash it on altogether? Why is there's no contact between the floor and the walls of the oven? So what's the big deal? Why can't you just have a chametz tikka oven and then 5 minutes later you just have a chametz tikka oven for baking kosher pesach food? What's the big deal? For that matter, forget the chametz for a second. We're not traceless. Why do we ever speak about kosher and oven? If a person moves into an apartment, why do they have to kosher and oven floor and make a basin? There's no bleeds whatsoever. So the evidence is that it's not so partial that you ever have to kosher and oven. It's based on a statement in the Shulchan Aruch, Hilchos Bas Bechol, according to Tshuvas HaRosh, where the Rosh says that even though normally we associate bulias with, let's say, pots and pans and silverware, with the actual contact of the food proper, or the liquid or the gravy of the food with the walls of the utensil, so the Rosh has some rise of the Mishnah, that the other makayrus in the Sefer Shulchan, that there's a concept of bulia al yedei zeya. It means if you have a food that's cooking, and the food that's cooking is giving off steam, so it's giving off heat, it's giving off steam, and this steam is shooting in different directions, and the steam is going into the walls of a clay. So zeya is halach equivalent like the liquid itself. Steam, there's what? Tell us all about steam.
Gaseous form of water.
Very good, okay, gaseous form of water. He's a resident expert over visiting this year. He's a resident expert on everything about everything. So a little bit of, comes to Rosh and says, that if I have, let's say, a pot of a chicken soup cooking, I would say, and some of the chicken soup itself splashes onto the walls of the oven, so of course that oven requires to be gassed. Of course that oven is going to be flushed. So the Rashi said, finished that even the chicken soup didn't splash onto the walls of the oven, but just the steam of the chicken soup went up and had penetrated, it was absorbed into the walls of the oven. That's also considered to be like a blue of Yisra. So that's what the Rosh says, that's what the Shulchan Aruch passed. So Ruchat Bas Bechal, we passed in Aloha, that Zay is considered to be like Mamish, that whenever there's a problem with Zay on something has to be patched. That's also the whole thing we haven't discussed on ovens is based on that Chuvus HaRosh, as well as the Shulchan Aruch. Oh, very good. Okay, so you're looking at the summer. I want to argue that maybe the whole thing of Bli of Zay only applies to liquids, doesn't apply to dry. But maybe, okay, but not for now, but I don't hear it anyway. I'm good at our Moshe. So, if it's true that we're going to kasher our ovens, we're going to assume that our ovens before Pesach have to be kasher because they have all kind of Blias of Zay, we cooked those onion in the ovens, we cooked all kind of stuff in the ovens over the course of the year. We made those, we made cakes in the oven, all kind of Zay has gotten into the walls of the oven. So we have to get out those bleeds, we have to cash it up. So our assumption is that you have to cash it right in even because there's no liquid there. So come some post and say, what do you mean there's no liquid there? The whole bleed was based on the fact that it's Ayude Zaya. And as, what did you say again, Zaya is what?
Gash is form of liquid.
Oh, liquid, there you go, that's the magic word. Get, Rav Henkin says, Gash is form of liquid. Zahalosha. So Rav Henkin, was a big place in America 60 years ago. So Rav Henkin timed it that, wait a second, the whole chashash for the ovens in the first place, the only reason why you have to catch ovens in the first place is because of the gaseous form of liquids. So liquids, liquid means a goal. So we really don't need liquids on an oven. All you have to do is a goal on an oven. I haven't yet begun to discuss how in the world you do that, but that was the premise of some post-kips. So many post-kips disagree with that. Many post-kips, it's not true, that it still requires a liquid. Notwithstanding the fact that it's a gaseous form of liquid, still requires a libun, there's no real liquid there, and it's all dry heat, and therefore, afi alocha, it requires libun, it's like a dabra abli idea h, and that's what we're going to work with the assumption for now, at least, that in order to kasher an oven, you require libun. So now the question becomes, practically, how do you go ahead doing this? So the person has an oven, comes to the right for Pesach, you want to kasher an oven, like anyone who's going to be home for Pesach probably wants to do. So how are you going to go about doing it? So the chur, you have to do a libun. We run into a little bit of a technical problem because in order to for a libun to suffice, so the Gemara says in the end of the Zara that libun has to reach a very, very high temperature. The Shia, the Chazal give it, it's so nitzim. It has to be hot enough that sparks and mamish flying. And I'm not a bucky enough to know how hot that is, but it sounds like it's pretty hot. So it has to be nitzotzot nitzim. It has to be something that's really, really mamish, really, really hot. And the consensus through the post-kip is that regular ovens do not reach that temperature. Let's say, for example, a person has an oven, and last week they baked the cake in that oven, and the day before that they rolled something up, whatever it is, the oven reached 550, and now they want to go ahead and kasher it, so what are they going to do? They turn on the oven to 550, it's crunch, it doesn't reach the shear of libun, it doesn't reach the cells of nitzim, so the chari has a problem. So one could perhaps solve the problem from the following tomorrow. Who said that we require libun for Pesach altogether? Maybe we're not going to have it against the wolf for no reason. Maybe libun never was necessary for Pesach. Maybe all that's necessary to cash a gallon for Pesach is Hagolah. Maybe that's what creates this situation. Maybe there's a text that says that. Because it has such a lashon, such a day in Psachim. That comes is considered to be a Teirah Bola. As we said before, just as by a Teirah Bola, the day of Mikdosh, it never was a requirement of libun. All that's necessary is Hagolah. Maybe when you cash a kelim for Pesach, you want to cash your barbecue spit, something which really had a blia in their age, mamish in their age, maybe it's enough to cash a chametz in a barbecue with hagol, because chametz is a terrible, according to Tosfos. If that would be true, that would make life much easier in terms of the ovens. Why would that be true? So that would permit us, if Tosfos is right, that would permit us to cash an oven idea hagol. So how are you going to do that? You take your oven and put it into a pot of water? Not too feasible. So there's a Mordechai, the Ramot quotes in Hilchos Hashem Kelim in the Pesach, where the Mordechai says as follows, that even though the Gemara only speaks about two processes, kashering, the Gemara speaks about Libun, and the Gemara speaks about Hagolah. Libun always means with a fire, Hagolah always means with water. So says the Mordechai, what if you do kashering with a fire, but you don't quite reach the shear of Yitzotzot Nitzim? It's not mamish, so it's not burning hot, so burning hot, that you meet the halakha criteria of Libun. Yeah, but with a new term that the Mordechai coined is called Libun Kal. What does Libun Kal mean? like the light, the lighter form of Limud. Is it in? I reach 800 degrees, whatever the shear of real Limud is, for argument's sake. But you reach 600 degrees. You reach, it was hot, it was pretty hot. There's a fire, there's a mamshah flame there. But it's not quite Yitzotot Nitzit. Comes to Mordechai and says as follows. This level of heat, this new category that he just made up, Srishana just made up, called Limud Kal, whenever the halacha requires Limud, so then Limud Kal is not going to work. Because I'll give a shear. If I can remember the halacha, it has to reach Yitzotot Nitzit. It's got to be 800 degrees, whatever the shear is. So anything short of that, it's not going to do the job. But what if you have a type of a kli that really suffices for hagola? I really could have done hagola for this. Oh, what? It's not practical to do hagola. It's too big to do hagola. I can't find a pot to put it in to do hagola. So what my said, the tzias advarim is I can't do hagola. So comes the Mordechai and says, well, anything that's dino of the hagola, it's just that it's impractical to do hagola in, then libun kal suffices. It's the chiddush gadol, doesn't say this anywhere in the Gemara. The Gemara only speaks about libun and hagola. And the halacha is, whatever needs libun needs libun. Whatever needs agola, if you get either agola or libun, this comes from what Hashem says. He thinks that libun kal is better than agola. So whatever was good enough for agola, if you can't practice, you go, oh, then do a libun kal and you're home free.
Why is it distinguished
between
the
actual
and the
diabetic?
Why
is
it only something that you can't do
to agola? No, in theory, you could do libun kal anything that needs agola. You want to play silverware, you can do that also. But it's harder to do that. So usually only reserve the count for those things which you couldn't practice. Okay.
If you're saying that this whole problem of an azeah, why couldn't you put a pan of water, a big pan of water in your oven, and just let it boil out, then you'll have a gala or azeah.
No, so that's what we're assuming, that even though you're right, that the bli was only through the azeah, somehow bli and azeah requires a libun.
But if it requires a gala, we're saying that it's a Pesach, why isn't Zeah considered to be Hagala, meaning we're saying that Zeah is Mayim, so now Mayim to get Hagala.
Kashra is Zeah. Okay, that's a fundamental story. Okay, that's an interesting Hagala. It is an interesting Hagala. I'll leave it at that. Okay? So wait a second, so maybe this is an Eitzah for the oven, so maybe, maybe you put on an oven, just turn on the oven, and you're not reaching legal to turn on the oven to 550. You're doing Hagol in your oven. It's just that you're not doing real Hagol, you're doing Libun Kal, which is a substitute for Hagol, which is better than Hagol. But the problem is, this is all assuming that Christ is right. This is all assuming that oven suffice with Hagol. This is all assuming that base is a terebola. And if the base is Yisurbola, comes as Yisurbola, then you're up the creek. Then just a regular Hagol is not good enough. And if a regular Hagol is not good enough, Libun Kal is not going to be good enough either. There's another possible objection. Just turning on the oven and cooling it a day and saying that it's good enough, is that the ovens are coated, and of all the ovens, but at least at one time, many of the ovens are coated with some kind of a porcelain type of a, all right? Coated with porcelain, good. Okay. So, they're coated with porcelain. The porcelain with a big machlekes in the dosi, what exactly the status of porcelain is. We usually assume that porcelain is dino cheres. So cheres, the Gemara says, cannot be kashin with hagol. It can be kashin with reboot. Circumstances, but it cannot be kashin with hagola. So for a variety of reasons, we don't want to just cool, turn on our ovens, and just cool it a day and say that it's hagola, and say that it's fine, even because chametz may be surabon, like the Ramban says, which is how we are machmir and shulchan aruch. We try to be chayshish from the Ramban shita, that chametz is surabon. We don't want to rely on tosfos just like that. And number two, this may be even a little bit worse because of the coating in the oven being porcelain, which may lechola days require libun. We're right back to square one, so it requires Libun. How are you going to do Libun exactly? What's shach the Libun on an oven? So this was a major machlekes, which really started out to be a machlekes every Rishonim, and ended up in our generation, last generation, to be a machlekes with Moshe and Rabbi Kotler.
Yeah,
he's
the real guy.
Hey, we can't. No, it doesn't mean that the Yitzhak can live with Nitzin. The fire is hot enough to create Yitzhak and Nitzin. The problem is like a lot of our things, a lot of our Kalim are treated with things, and it's not going to be Yitzhak and Nitzin. That's also going to be. So there was a major machlekes in the Rishonim about how to understand the relationship, or perhaps lack thereof, between the Kashrim method of Hagola and the Kashrim method of Libun. So the Gemara Masechus Tzachim uses the term concerning kashrut with hagola, kibolo kach polto. The Gemara says, how does hagola look? What kind of game is this? The Gemara says, they received the bliya through hot water, now the bliya goes out through hot water. So the Gemara says, yeah, kabbalah kach polto. That's what happens. That it's the same way it went in, so that's the way it that's the way it goes out. Kabbalah kach polto. So the Gemara never uses that phrase concerning libur. So some Rishonim say, even though the Gemara didn't use the phrase, but it's understood. That's what it means. I mean, what's the smart in mechalik? Why should it be a difference whether it was cooked with water, whether it was cooked with fire? The answer is all of Kashrut is based on that principle of Kabbalah Kach Polto. So the way it went in, that's the way it went out. So if it went out merely with water, it goes out merely through water. If it went in through the Eish, then it goes out through the Eish. So Kabbalah Kach Polto is the underlying principle that governs both Hagol as well as libur. That's what some Rishonim say. And other Rishonim say it's not true. Other Rishonim say that Kabbalah Kach Polto was only said by Chazal in terms of Hagolah, and it has nothing to do with libur, because there are all like that. There are all claims that Kabbalah Kach Polto is true for Hagolah. It's not true for libur. Libur works based on a different set of rules. Libur works that it serves as an issur b'mekomo. That libur destroys the issur, doesn't draw the issur out. And the method of Hagolah is moving maflit, or it pulls the issur out, and then it gets rid of it, then it dissolves it. When it comes to Libun, so Libun is surface isn't the Koma, it doesn't work very well. What prophets are Rishonim to say such a chiluk? The Gemara never uses that phrase. The Gemara only uses the phrase Kabbalah Kach Polto in the realm of Kashrei. So what if some Rishonim draw this distinction between Hagolah and Libun? So they were bothered. The Gemara says, Tzach, I put it in the Koma. So the Gemara says that there's a Kav Gomel Kuo, Ein Acheres Yotzim, they don't really know. The Gemara says, how many apostles are going to stop? The Torah says that you have a clean chayshes, you have a metal pot that you use to cook chatas in, so then you kasher the merk b'shit the panayim. What does the Torah say about cheres pot? The Torah draws a distinction, the Torah contrasts the clean cheres and the clean chayshes. Clean chayshes, so you have to kasher it by hot water. You can't kasher it, you have to just throw it out. You have to break it, you can't do anything with it. You can't just kasher it without water. So comes the Gemara and says, that the Torah tells us that Golah doesn't work for Klicheres, because you can't draw out the bliya. The bliya gets so absorbed into it's so porous, the earthenware, that the bliya gets stuck inside, and it's never going to come out. Therefore, Golah is never going to work for Klicheres, based on this possible precious tzav. So Abba Bichayim, the Gemara says, that Libun will work on. If a person really wants to do Libun on, that he can do. So why does the Torah tell you Yishaveh? Since Kash, the Gemara's Vach talks about, why doesn't the Torah tell you to do it? But in theory, if you want to do it, if you want to take the Kharis and do Libun on, so then you must prepare which you really can do. You can do Libun on the Kharis. So comes their answer, how would that be? If on the one hand, the Torah Eidah, She'ein Kharis Yaitzim, and Nefil Yerazam, that the Bliyas will never ever be drawn out of the Kharis, so how does Libun work? So comes around to the answer is that Libun doesn't work through drawing things out. Libun doesn't work through bliyas and plaitas. Libun works to serve as Issur b'mekomo. It's destroying the Issur in its very place. So therefore, you don't need the idea of plaita. You don't need to draw it out. So that's the Ra'oz Yisur. Like you said, Mishavim, what's the nature of Libun? If Libun is the same basically as Hagolah, they both work through plaita. Or it's Hagolah works through plaita, and Libun works through service as b'mekomo. My nafkamina ladina, at the end of the day, Hagolah works and Libun works. Who cares what the locus is? So let's look at the following case. Let's say, although the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah that in order for a Libun to be effective, it has to be very, very hot. It has to be mamish nitzotzes nitzim. It has to be mamish super duper duper hot. What if I happen to know for a fact that the fire that I used, which caused the problem in the first place, only reached X degrees? I know for a fact it only reached 500 degrees. I know for certain, no shadows about it. The days of Chazal, that was pretty hard statement to make. Hard to measure fire. But let's say I know for a fact that it never got hotter than 500 degrees. So what's that look up? If I want to kasha something that had a bliya of 500 degrees, can I use a fire of 500 degrees? Is that good enough or not? Assuming that the 500 degree fire doesn't reach the shear of Nitzelzos Nitzim. So come a group of poskim and say, look, it should be okay. Why should it be okay? Because what's the underlying principle of kasher in general? Kabbalah Kach Polto. So the same way that whatever method was used to get it in, that's the method that's used to get it out. So the same degree of temperature that got it in, that degree of temperature could be used to get it out. So in the days of Chazal, when it was impossible to measure how hot the fire was, so Chazal said, you have to use the highest possible fire. It's so nitzim. You got to use the highest possible shear of a fire that was used in the days of Chazal. Because you never know. Maybe the fire that the bliya was 700 degrees, maybe it was 300 degrees, maybe it was 500 degrees, you don't know. But if we have to reach the highest shiur, it tells us nitzim. But this man hazeh, if you can measure, you can quantify how hot the fire was, and you know for a fact it was only 500, so maybe Kabbalah Kachkoto permits you to suffice with such a level of fire, and that's good enough. You can be makshir the kli al yedei libun. What do you mean libun? How can you call that libun? Because your head is called libun. I found it tells us nitzim. It doesn't matter. You don't need it tells us nitzim. You only need it tells us nitzim if you don't know how hot the fire was. But if you know for a fact the fire was only X, and then the fire that's kashmir is X, that's also good enough. So that was a position of many folks from Rav Kotler, and others held that way, that in theory you can mimic the original fire, so then that'll be good enough. It doesn't meet the official halachic criteria of mitzvot, it doesn't matter. That shiur of mitzvot of pitzim is just a shiur, just to be certain that you reached the amount of heat that the original bliya happened. So if you know for a fact you reached that level of heat, without mitzvot of pitzim, that's also okay. That's what some of us said. And others said that whole premise of that argument is faulty, right? If Liban would have been based on Kabbalah Kachpoto, then you could have argued maybe that's correct. But since Liban has nothing to do with Kabbalah Kachpoto, like there are all says, Liban is based on surface, Issa and Gomlo, so Kachnem Ramach HaMashavisimah, you need mitzvot of Nitzim finished. That's the Shir of Liban, Kashal and Isa. Your fire is only 400, he's out of here. That the only thing that can be surface, Issa and Gomlo, is only a fire of the Shir of mitzvot of Nitzim. So mitzvotism is not just the shear of Kabbalah Kachpoto. Mitzvotism, that's the shear of surface. It's a Bukomo. Nothing short of that. There's no one to advise. That was Moshe's opinion. So this machlaikis, the expand out of the machlaikis of Rishonim, where the Liban works based on Kabbalah Kachpoto, where the Liban works based on surface, it's a Bukomo, led to a major machlaikis in the very first in the last generation. If you have a controlled fire, I know that I never went over 550, and I use a fire 550 degrees to cash and call that Liban. So this is the machlokes had a kasher ovens. This machlokes, the lomdish machlokes in terms of kabbalah kachpoto versus surface, this is mukombo, the relationship, lack thereof, between libun and hagdalah. This is the shah aloch lemaisa. How do you go ahead and kasher an oven? So you have an oven. So I know for a fact that the heat never got above 550. How do I know that? So it's at the thermostat. It can't get above 500. You go into the system. It's impossible for the fire to get above 550. So the fire cannot get above 550, I can capture it, according to some Belskim, turning it on to 550. As long as, let's say, for argument's sake, it takes, throwing out numbers, 45 minutes, an hour or so, for the oven to reach 550. So if I do that, if I mimic that original bliya, so then that'll be okay. So in economic, that's what for Baron Hill, that's what others have helped, others help that way, that when you capture an oven for paying for pace, that when you capture us, so as long as you turn on the oven to the highest amount that it ever was on, and leave it there for the amount of time that if it can't get any hotter than that system is impossible to get any hotter than it's at right now. So that's good enough, and that's called Liban. Not that we're being made on saying that it's called Hagolah. Not that we're being made on saying it's called Liban Gal. No, that's called Liban Gomel. That's Liban Gomel. It's 100% kosher Liban. It's not Mitzotzos Nitzim. It doesn't matter. You don't need Mitzotzos Nitzim because of the fact that it's Kabbalah Kachpoto. And Rav Moshe was opposed to that. Rav Moshe said that if it's not itself, it's nitzim, so it's garnished. It's nothing. Behold, that chometz is isurabola, and it's a chashash and klicheres because it's porcelain, and the only thing that can capture an oven, says Rav Moshe, is libun gomer, and it's impossible to have libun gomer on an oven, but just turning it on because it just doesn't get hot enough. It doesn't reach the shear of itself, it's nitzim. What do you have to do, according to Rav Moshe? So Rav Moshe writes, so you gotta line the oven, you gotta put in an oven service, you gotta put in some kind of contraption. If there's no connection between the walls of the oven and food of your cookies, it becomes a hard thing to do. But according to Rav Moshe, there's no real way of catching an oven.
So the self-cleans.
Oh, we're getting this. So this stuff like this was 50 years ago in the old ovens. You can talk about sticking blowtorch in the ovens. No, I don't want to blowtorch ovens. Okay, no one should stick a blowtorch in the oven.
If you're putting something against the walls of the oven, like Ramosh is saying, like an insert, wouldn't that, let's say you put like foil or something, metal foil, that would be touching the wall, so wouldn't the metal from the foil be bolea from the walls of the oven, and then you're still, now you just made your insert trade?
Not so posh. It's a clee, bolea, and clee, it's a different story. The zay is a lot of reasons why that's not true. Okay? So this machlokes was a running machlokes in Chai Yisrael for many, many years. This machlokes existed, had a cash of ovens. According to Moshe, basically couldn't practically cash an oven. You had to put some kind of insert in, according to Rav and others. So you were able to do it, just turning it on to the highest. And then Baruch self-cleaning ovens, so it gets very, very hot. And believe it or not, it can reach how hot? Why no?
Over
900 degrees. 900 degrees, that's what they tell me. The inside of the self-cleaning oven reaches the self-cleaning cycle. And therefore, the Chora, we have a right to assume that is a ready Nitzotzos Nitzin. That's what the overwhelming majority tells us to assume. That's Libin Gomer. It's even Rabbi Shavli, but it's Baruch Hashem, those of self-cleaning ovens. So the whole phrase, they learned tomorrow, that even Rabbi Ramaisha, the Chora, the ovens are okay, because you just turn on the self-cleaning oven for a couple of hours, and it mamish, it gets rid of everything. That's Libin Gomer. Except for one small technical problem. Small technical problem is that the doors of the self-cleaning oven don't reach 900 degrees, for an obvious reason, that they don't want somebody to touch the door of the oven. So they have all kinds of safety features built in, the way it's described to me, and I don't understand all the physics, but apparently the door never reaches anywhere near 900, correct?
The outside, for sure.
Yeah, the inside, for sure. The inside? I think it's made in such a way, I can't exactly understand how.
The pasta.
What?
The pasta on the inside. The whole inside 900 degrees. The door probably goes down. The inside of the door probably doesn't.
I don't know. From what? I see people might have a lot of experience in Kasher and Caleb, so some of them have a lot to say about the topic. I don't know. So, that was a lot of fun. Michael? You again. What's up, Michael?
We never shopped
in the room for a second. Good. Good. Okay, good. So, the Vaisai. The way it's described to me is that the inside of the door doesn't get to 900. I don't know whether it's true. If you're right, I'm happy to hear that. So, wait a second now. The inside of the door doesn't get to be 900, so then we bought ourselves self-cleaning ovens, and everyone's all excited, and now we have to even put the Moshe and ovens of Kadas, the Kulach and Kulach and Kulach and Kulach. Wait a second, the Kulach and Moshe is still no good, because the door of the oven is still, all it reached was 600, for argument's sake. So according to Mara, and according to the Rav, according to those who held that as long as it gets as hot as it ever could have gotten, so that's good enough. So obviously the self-cleaning cycle gets the door hotter than it ever was before. So I don't think that's the question. So I think for sure it would be good. But the whole mile of self-cleaning oven was supposed to be good with holidays. We wanted to make an oven that's crushing the crunch of a bunch of. So my highly wanted self-cleaning ovens. So one of two possibilities to solve that problem. So one way to solve that problem is to say that even if crunch of a bunch of, the bli of ovens, remember when we started with Shia, we said the bli of ovens, is more of a shaila of Zeya. That was the real problem in the first place. So there's a shaila when you talk about Zeya being a problem. Does Zeya go in all directions, or does Zeya only go primarily up and down? So it could be that any belia that's in the wall, that's in the door of the oven, may not concern us all that much. So if that's true, so then even according to Ramesh, may be able to breathe a sigh of relief. If we're not convinced that fact is true, so then according to Ramesh, what you would have to do is you would have to cover the door of the ovens. In Echinami, going to Moshe and the old ovens, you have to cover the entire oven. That's a big hassle. Put aluminum foil in the entire oven, that's not so easy. But just to stick a big piece of aluminum foil against the inside of the door of the oven, that's not so difficult. It's a little clumsy sometimes when you open and close the oven, so you have to check with your wives and mothers how to do that. But according to Moshe, those wondering again, is the Chumra Gabichum, this is following Moshe's idea that you require to even cover the ovens, which according to Moshe, cannot be done without ovens. Assuming that Ramesh is right, and assuming that Bliyas not only go up and down, but the Bliyas of Zayin go sideways also. So then, Alex is not correct about the temperature of the door. All of those assumings are correct, so then there would be reason to put a piece of aluminum foil against the inside of the oven door. So if your mothers don't want to do that, please don't drive them crazy. But just sort of explain to you where the source where that idea came from, of putting aluminum foil. It's all working with these a couple of assumptions. Again, with the old machlokes has been out of cash ovens in the good old days. Then you have the shout about cashing ovens in our days. Self-cleaning makes things significantly better. But even according to self-cleaning, there may be a little bit of a quirk that's still a problem. What do you mean? The old cell ovens? The old ovens? Well, self-cleaning is a cycle, so you just turn it on to the old self-cleaning ovens. But the old cell ovens have to get hot enough that as hot as it ever could have gotten. So the question is just the serious question, how long does that take? So what our company used to say, it's going to be on for a few hours. So they pointed out that after a X amount of time, it doesn't get any hotter. So how long does it take for the oven to reach the hottest?
Put an
oven at 550.
Depends the type of oven you have.
Oh, that's right, depends on the diplomatic answer. It usually assumes only about 45 minutes to an hour, so that's not as hot as possible. Yeah. Does anyone have anything else to say about ovens except for Alex? No, but it's a sur. No, but it's a surable. Number one, it's a surable, and number two, it's glass, which may be worse. Well, no, it's not worse than porcelain, but it's worse than metal, because it's not like it's not in the shadow. Where the glass is, but in the first place, when machmir that it's bolam, it's never polished. So we would. So that's a.
What about gaskets that seal work that are made out like some sort of fabric? It's some sort of material.
I don't know if they made it, hopefully it comes out. No, I don't. I don't know. Whatever material was bullet, so it was bullet.
I'm pretty sure that we run ourselves cleaning cycle twice. Do you know of that? Am I making that up? Is that, have you heard that?
I just heard it now.
Okay.
It's all assumed that the oven was cleaned out.
Well, you know, with regular ovens, you have to mamish clean out first. So cleaning ovens, I think you shmom came in, though, because it's supposed to, that's what it's supposed to do. I mean, of course, you know, your mothers will clean first, like the people clean before the cleaning lady comes, which helps you be dirty. So, but I think that the point of the cleaning up is supposed to do that.
Yeah, that temperature is off your, let's say, crumbs in the bottom.
Whatever it is gonna self-destruct. Anything that's left, you don't want to cleaning up, there's a lot of cooks in Nevada, and it's all okay. So, up to the guys, we spoke about three different things to kasher and Pesach, so we only spoke about ovens. So, this is an out of the ovens, so we'll try to give not as time to the other things. So the next thing to kasher is the stovetop. So stovetops, anyone who doesn't know what stovetops are, those things on top of the stove where the little like raised things that you put a pot, you know, like you guys probably don't like to put a pot of water or something, but it's a stovetop. So before microwaves, that's how people used to cook. So stovetops, the question is, you have to kasher them all together. So how exactly did they become traits in the first place? In the case of stovetops, how exactly did they become traits in the first place? So here there is a halacha that appears in Yeridaya that's called Ein Kli Balevi Kli Ela Derech Reita. So what in the world is that? Means in the Shana B'diyah from Sugya in the Chulin, the Gemara speaks about as follows. Let's say you have two pieces of meat which are next to each other, and the mamish two pieces of dry meat. There's no liquid, there's no rotav, there's no gravy going between the two. And one is kosher, one is stray. So technically speaking, that gets a little bit complicated. The mushal that I gave wasn't the best mushal. But in that sugya of Bas B'chalav, so the Gemara has the possibility that unless you have a liquid, so something that may be balua in one of the chatitas of meat, let's say the mushal, one piece of meat has a bli of chalav in it, so it has some milk that's balua, that's absorbed into one piece of meat, and then that one piece of meat touches another piece of meat, so unless there's some kind of a liquid medium, so the chalav is not going to transfer over to the second piece of meat. So keep your shem rabbi in the sugya instead of schooling. So ain't a balua yotze bechatik lachatika ala de rota. That's a cloud that many Rishonim have. So the Rishonim developed a carlet of that rule. That's called ain't kli balevi kli ala de rota. Why is a kli trait in the first place? What's chomus think about a kli? Let's say the mushal I have these burn, right? So it's grain on top of my stove. So it's a chomus stick of grain. It's chomus, but it's a piece of bread. Is that at one time I may have made oatmeal, some of the oatmeal that I'll spilled over, and it's balua into the walls of this of the grain. So there's a blea inside the grain. It's not the end on the grain. I wash it off. There's nothing on it. So the problem is there's a tam that's balua inside it. So now, if I go ahead and I take a piece of matzah and I toast a piece of matzah on top of the grain, so then some of the blea of the oatmeal is going to come out of the grain into the piece of matzah. It's going to make my matzah balua. But that's not what most people do on their stovetop. So most people do is they go ahead and they take a pot and they're cooking an egg inside the pot on top of the grain. So where exactly is the bulia gonna come from? So the bulia inside the dry grape is gonna go out of the grape into the pot. So that's what the Rishonim say that doesn't happen. Ain't kli balemi kli ela derech rota, the same way that a bulia, a double bulia, the milk that's bulia into one chatich of meat, doesn't transfer to the other piece of meat unless there's a rota to transfer it. So to over here, unless there's a rota, unless there's a liquid to transfer the bulia from one plate to the next, it doesn't happen. So the ikanigra that we pass in ain't kli balemi kli ela derech rota. So therefore, the pashas at varm is that the concept of having a trefa burner, but the concept of having a chametzik burner is a meaningless statement. You don't need a chametzik burner. It's only balua with chametz, and that bleed is not going to go out because you're never putting food directly on there. So even though that seems to be true, nevertheless, the Shulchan Aruch of Pesach writes not the way. The Shulchan Aruch writes that one is opposed to kasher, their burners. Melech doesn't discuss exactly how burners, we discuss the simple fact of the thing. The place where you put the pot on, says Shulchan Aruch, if you use the place where you put the pots on it, you're supposed to kasher it for Pesach. Notwithstanding the fact that any people later clean out their burners. Why is that? So one possible reason is that we're just a little bit more machmir on the Pesach than we are the rest of the year. And even when it comes to the rest of the year, it's not 100% that everybody even agrees to that klal of ein kli b'leim mikli. L'maisa, when it comes to Pesach, alok l'maisa, the shukran pasta, you have to be machmir, you have to kasher the kalim, even though in the chenam, you're not going to put real food directly onto the kalim. So it's based on this, that Rav Moshe writes that the top of a stove, the ikra din is really never has to be kasher. The ikra mikra din, if you have a tray for stove top, so if it's clean, there's no be'en on it, the ikra din, you can really use it for your kosher pot on it. Because any kli b'leim mikli out of there for all day. Most people don't like to do that. But the ikra din should really be okay. But shenki, if the chomet says Rav Moshe, then the minig is then you have to kasher. Since the Shulchan Aruch says, and we don't rely on this klal of any kli b'leim mikli when it comes to chomet, so that's the reason why you have to kasher your stove top. So how do you go ahead and kasher your stove top? So the chora, you have to kasher ayyadei libud. You have to do whatever's considered to be a libud. So what kind of libud? How are you going to do a libud on your stove top? So there are a few ways of doing it. So in the olden days, the only way to do libud on your grate in your stove top was to turn on the fire as high as you can and hope that that reaches the point of libud. Now again, you may not necessarily need a real absolute libud gomer because the whole requirement of doing the gather in the first place may not be an absolute nature of din. It may be more of a homer katar's pesa. So they have to do a very nakal out of you. If you turn on the fire and you have to put something on top of the fire, you don't put a pot on top of the fire, it's not going to get hot enough. So the old eights used to be is you take a pot of water and you put it on top of the fire, you turn the fire to the highest, and let it sit there for 20 minutes, whatever as long as it takes for it to get hot, and it gets as hot as it ever was when you were cooking covers on it, and that should be good enough, that should be considered to be, for real people, a little cow, whatever it takes to do, whatever is necessary to do it. That was the old style of kashering the tops of the burners. Then some came up with a great idea, if you have a self-cleaning oven, so then you can take those grates and throw them in the yourself, you know what happens to them? No, those are getting rehats.
They may break, but
okay, good. So you have to try it once. If you try it once and you fail, so then you fail. So again, there are different aces. The idea being that you have to do some kind of libud, something that resembles libud on these staff. But again, with the background information being that in terms of all year long, you really didn't have to kasher anything. So it's a chumrah katar space. So you try to do your best. You try to kasher either with the pots of water on top of it or the stuff in the oven. Or you buy new ones, whatever you do. But the top should be kasher. Those parts of the stove that can't be kasher, let's say the marshal, usually on the top of the stove, so there's some area where you can sometimes put the pot down, so that should be covered. So you cover that with a little foil. So that's the way to solve that problem. Good, so we knocked off two things, the oven and the stove top. So we're going to get that example. Okay? The third major kli that's kasher in the kitchen is the sink. So sink here also, here we don't need libud at all. Here we can do hagalah. But there's a major, major machlek as opposed to what exactly is the status of the sink. So what exactly is the shayla? The shayla is... Somewhere in your basement, there's a boiler, right? Hot water in the boiler and the fire underneath the boiler. So what's the status of the boiler? It's called a kli. Okay? That's a kli rishon. Now, what's coming out of your boiler? What? A lot of pipes. And finally, over here, you have your sink. With your faucets. This pipe is leading into here. Now the water is coming out, shooting out of these pipes, and filling up your sink. And during the course of the year, you have, let's say, you just washed out a bowl of pasta, something in there, so you got hot pasta shooting around in here with the boiling water coming out of here. So the multi-million dollar question is, what exactly is the status of this sink? So what do I mean by that? What is the status of the sink? Is the sink, when the water is coming out of this pipe, is this considered to be still a kli rishon or not? What's the shayla? So the question is as follows. L'chora, so by the time the the water comes out, right? This was a Kli Rishon. So everything that's coming out of the Kli Rishon is considered to be Iri Kli Rishon. It was a reference from the Seder Shabbos. So when we pour hot water out of a Kli Rishon, so once it enters into the sink, it's already considered to be what? It's already considered to be Kli Sheni. So by the time the water hits the sink, it's Kli Sheni. But by the time when the water came out of the spout, it was Iri Kli Rishon. So l'chora, in order to kasha, we go back to the rules of Kabbalah Kachtolto. So anything that received the Bliya in a Kli Rishon itself has to be kasha in a Kli Rishon knowledge. Anything that received the Bliya in a through a Kli Rishon, but it wasn't inside the pot, but rather the Bliya only took place once it already left the walls of the Kli Rishon. So l'chora happy to kasha it through a Kli Rishon also. So therefore, a person wants to kasha the sink, so they don't have to make the sink into a Kli Rishon. What can they do to cash in the sink? So just do Iri Kli Rishon. How do you do that? You just take a pot of tea kettle and fill it up with water, boil it up, take it off the fire, and then pour it all around the sink. So they just mimic what the original Kli was. So that should be good enough. That's what most would say. But if a person has a metal sink, if you don't have a metal sink, you have a porcelain sink, you go back to square one, you can't cash the porcelain because it's cheres. But if you have a metal sink, the L'chara Iri Kli Rishon should be good enough. It's L'chara, not everybody agrees, but that's what most people are doing. I think one has the right to be made on that. So Alex has one more question. We've been talking a lot about kashering, about how Pesach is maybe even more chomer than certain other kashering during the course of the year. Usually we associate certain chumras with Pesach. We saw one possible chumra, cool, maybe comes to terrible in Mokal. But there is one important chumra that we do have in terms of Pesach that changes that perspective on kashering, and that's followed. The Gemara says in the end of the sentence of Avodah Zarah that midah araisa, the whole parasha of kashering kelim, only applies when the kli is a ben yomo. It only applies when you just cooked in the pot within the last 24 hours. You just used the barbecue grill within the last 24 hours. Then you have to kasher midah araisa. What if you used it a week ago? What if you used it more than a day ago? Then whatever time was inside the walls of the pot, it's considered to be no sin time with God. It doesn't taste good anymore. So if you have a pot that I used to cook chazer last week, and now I'm going to put salt in it, so whatever time is going to come out of the walls of chazer, so that chazer time in the walls of the pot is not going to taste so good. It's not going to taste the food, it's going to trap the taste of the food. And it's called those in time of gam. It was a quick test, I don't know, and it's not in time of gam, what's the midah araisa, huh? But we're asking that it is. So based on the fact that we hold that the midah time of gam is really what's the midah araisa, was a all-encompassing statement of Usra Torah and like Deir Bas Yeva. The only time you have to kasha kelim, the rice is only between the same day. So you just got a tray for clean this morning, you want to use it to cook supper with, then you have a problem. But if you use it already more than 24 hours ago, now you want to cook, it's much like a chumra to cook it with the rice. It says the Gemara, but the Rabbani now let it do that. Because gezeir she'en bas yomo, atu bas yomo. The Chumra were afraid that if you're going to cook with kederos, which are any ben yomos, well, the next thing you know, you're going to cook with kederos, which are ben yomos, which would be a problem with the rice. So therefore, the Derabbanan, they require kasher kelim. So the kasher kelim is a kasher deraisa. It's a din deraisa. The only thing is that 99.9% of the time when we kasher kelim from treifas, it's only the Derabbanan because 24 hours have already passed. Since the Gemara of Ezra, that since the whole din of kasher kelim after 24 hours is only the Derabbanan, it was only instituted l'chatchila. But with the evidence, if you went ahead and cooked in a pot that was used with real treifas, it comes in also with the evidence for discussion. Let's say the marshal last week I cooked the vela in the pot, and now this week I go and I cook chol in the pot. So I wasn't allowed to do that with the rabbanim. I wasn't supposed to do it with the rabbanim mechuyav kasher. But so with the evidence I did, so the food is going to be kosher. That's why it's very, very hard to treif up food because I use the treif pot. I did not say at the time that I use the treif pot, but the evidence nishka fell, the food's going to be kosher anyway. So the one possible exception to that rule may be chametz for Pesach. Chametz for Pesach is the machoik to see Rishonim. Is Nosin Tam of Gam Mutameh Chametz for Pesach. So according to those who showed were saying that Nosin Tam of Gam is a problem for Chametz for Pesach, so then Lechora, even a cliche and a binyom is going to be a problem. Why would anybody say such a thing that Nosin Tam of Gam is a problem for Chametz for Pesach? So the reason my claim is that we showed how to understand the nature of this din that Nosin Tam of Gam is Mutter. So some Rishonim say that Nosin Tam of Gam is Mutter is because whatever Tam, the Tam Pogam, is considered to be so minute, so little. So it's like bottle. It's like Ilu's bottle b'shishim. If you have a tam that's really bottle b'shishim, so it's not bottle b'shishim, it's not a problem. But even if you have a tam that's not bottle, it's quantitatively it's not bottle, but qualitatively it's bottle. It's such a shrak of tam. It's so not accomplishing what it's supposed to accomplish, so we treat it as Ilu's bottle b'shishim. So come some Rishonim and say that's the lumbus of Mezin Tamas Gav. If that's true, that leads a problem with Luchas Pesach. With Chametz, we have a cloud. Mark Sotman says, the Chametz of Pesach is Asa B'Mashahu. Even the smallest amount of Chametz poses a problem. So if you have Chametz of Pesach and Asa B'Mashahu, the corollary of that is, according to some Rishonim, is that Mezin Tamas Gav is also Asa B'Pesach. If all that's true, that Mezin Tamas Gav is also B'Pesach, so that will give us a much more Chametzic perspective on Kasher and Kalim. But with Kasher Kalim all year long, so our attitude is, yeah, we do the job and kasher, and we always go back to my road, we do fuck the kasher, and the food's kosher with the Eben anyway. But Chometz and Pesach, if the kasher is not done properly, so then according to some Rishon, even the food's also for the Eben, because there's still palm that's left in the walls of the pot. It's Mason Tavu Gam, it doesn't matter. Mason Tavu Gam doesn't save you when it comes to Pesach. So, yeah, you should take all kasher seriously, if you're kasher for all your lunch, you can do that seriously, but a kasher for Pesach is even more serious, because of the fact that there may be some negative repercussions. Even with the other may be a problem, if you assume that doesn't have a gap, is an extension of the kind of the problem of the basic of the stop it now.